What? I'm too cool to fake. Stop playing with me, I got moves to make. Mark. They say the real niggas back again. It's racing through my veins every lap I win. Police try to smash when I'm passing them. Cause I'm rich and I'm fly and I'm African. Slow down, let me pump my brakes. In this world where you judge by how much you make, but I ain't really judged by how much you fake. Either you winning or you losing. What's your fate? What? Cali, this my state. Eating too good, plus I want your plate. And I want your bitch. It don't seem like a tall order. If I want her, I'ma take her like Paul Walker. Why? I'm too.
What's going on, family? Welcome to the Tariq Elite Show. And this is your gracious host, Mr. Tariq Elite Nasheed. So glad to have everybody tuning in on today's show. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Today's show, by the way, is brought to you by BlackTokyoTours.com. Black folks, it's time for you to get your travel game up. And a lot of times, black people are fearful to go to other countries and other cities and other places around the world. So that's why you need to check out BlackTokyoTours.com, because they're specifically designed to accommodate melanoid people on vacations to Japan. Now, they have vacation packages that'll take care of your flight, your limo service, and they'll give you translation services once you get over there. And they will also accommodate you to all the right tourists and cultural and hotspots in Tokyo. So go to BlackTokyoTours.com. Also, don't forget to check out 7ammovie.com. 7am Movie, that's coming out in theaters nationwide and also worldwide January 17th. That's my man Jason Black's movie. He has some hot shots in the movie. He has Umar Johnson in this movie, Claude Anderson, so many great speakers that's talking about getting your economic game together. So that's 7ammovie.com. And also don't forget to go to HiddenColorsFilm.com and get Hidden Colors 1, 2, and 3. And don't forget to go to TariqElite.com to get all that fresh fly gear. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, let's chop up some game here. I want to talk a lot about what's been happening this week in regards to Ferguson and also what's going on in Cleveland with another case of a young child that's been killed by police. But we'll get on that a little bit later. Real quick in the news, Halle Berry, speaking of racism, white supremacy, y'all know Halle Berry, she has a daughter with a white supremacist, and he's a confirmed white supremacist, because if you listen to my show a few years earlier, when Halle Berry and the guy she was dating and had the child with, when they broke up, Halle revealed that the guy used to call her all types of nigga bitches and the whole shebang. So he's a confirmed white supremacist. And that's just something that black people have to understand. Just because somebody's sitting up having sex with you, that's not going to stop them from being a white supremacist sometimes. White supremacy is all about domination, and that's sexual domination. And once you step out of your boundary socially, they try to drop you down a notch by putting you in the nigger bag. So the white supremacist, it's real heavy, and you got to accept white supremacy for what it is. But the situation with Halle Berry, her and her baby's daddy, his name escapes me right now. His name escapes me right now. But they have a daughter, and Halle is upset because she claimed that he's trying to make their daughter white. Halle says that her baby's dad bleaches the daughter's hair, and she's like a kid. I'm thinking she's around 8 or 9, so she's a young kid. But Halle says that the dad straightens her hair and dyes it blonde so she could look more white. And she took the guy to court, and she's trying to get some kind of court order to stop him from straightening and dyeing the little girl's hair. And I feel so bad for this little girl. I really feel bad. That's a hell of an environment to deal with. And also to have a dad who happens to be a white supremacist. That's not fly. That's a sad thing. It goes back to that old plantation thing. The white supremacists would have kids running around all over the plantation, and they still kept them in slavery. So again, white supremacists can have black kids and still practice white supremacy, but that's heavy. And we need to understand how white supremacy works, family. White supremacy is some sick shit. white supremacy is some demonic, sick nonsense. But it's a phenomenon that dominates you, and it doesn't hold children exempt. We talked about that in Hidden Colors 3. Children who are melanoid children, are not exempt from white supremacy. The white supremacists are sadistic and demonic, man. That's why that system of white supremacy has to be replaced with a system of justice. And that goes in today's show. Today I want to talk about the super nigga fantasy. Now, some of you might be wondering, what's the super nigga fantasy? The super nigga fantasy is basically what some people in the professional sociology world, they call it the super predator fantasy. This whole phenomenon where black people, particularly black men, are created through the social narrative and perceived to be some type of super predator upon the dominant white society. That's the political correct term. It's called the super predator fantasy. But I call it the super nigga fantasy. Because the super nigga fantasy, it's something that's been perpetuated during slavery. I was going to say after slavery, but even during slavery, the white supremacists had to create this narrative about black people to justify mistreating black people. So they had to say things like, well, these people have superhuman strength. They're super niggas. They're not really human. They're like something else. So that's why we can enslave them and have them work all day and all night and have them work all their lives for free. Because they're super niggas. They can do it. This is why we can breed the women and make them pop out all these babies. They're super niggas. They can do that. So it goes beyond the predator thing, because the whole super nigga fantasy that was born on the plantation, and we black people weren't predatory on plantations. They just made us to be something almost superhuman or inhuman. People capable of taking all types of pain. You understand? And they would say that. They would say, well, black people, they feel less pain because of their black skin. They would actually say that. So that super nigga fantasy, it has perpetuated itself in different variations. And you have to understand, when we talk about white supremacy, and we don't talk about white supremacy in this country, we talk about everything under the sun except systematic white supremacy. And white supremacy is always the common denominator. And another thing, family, please stop letting the white supremacists use the tired, cliche, deflective argument about what about black on black crime. Because whenever you try to talk about systematic white supremacy or police brutality or anything else, the white supremacists will deliberately divert the conversation by saying, what about black on black crime? And what happens is that black people spend all this time trying to explain, and the white supremacists are somewhere creeping out of the room, high-fiving each other. It's the only reason they bring that up is to deflect. It's a deflectionary tactic, so you will stop talking about white supremacy. So anything you say other than what about white supremacy is exactly what they want you to do. The white supremacists are not dumb. They know the whole stats and the real deal about black on black crime. You're not educating them about no black on black crime. They know that it's a farce. They know that black on black crime is actually, it's down. They know that black on black crime is not really marginalized. It's everybody has the same level of crime within their group. So they overemphasize black on black crime to justify harming you. That's that super nigga fantasy that black people are just constantly 24 hours a day committing crime. That's the narrative that they try to pretend is happening. So you always go back to white supremacy. Whenever they say, what about black on black crime? You say, what about white supremacy? That's what I do with them. and stop falling for that diversionary tactic. And just because a coon does it, because that's another thing. You have coons who do that too. They're just trying to somehow gain favor with white supremacists by saying that. When black folks be like, what about black on black crime? That's just a coon trying to get a butter biscuit. So you don't take that serious either. Go back to white supremacy. What about white supremacy? But I digress. But the whole super nigga fantasy, it perpetuates itself in different ways. And remember, the stereotypes about black people, they never change. The white supremacist stereotypes, they pretty much remain the same. They just come back in different variations. See, white supremacy, when you, because a lot of us don't read older books and older material. I do. And this is why history is so important, because when you understand history, you see that a lot of this stuff simply has not changed. And racism, white supremacy keeps us going back into the same circle. We keep going into this circle. We circle right back to square one because we do not attack the issue of white supremacy. That's why right now, 2014, the international world and community is looking at us right now. Fires burning in Ferguson. Protests all around the country about race. The international press talking about America and its race problem. We still got a goddamn race problem because nobody's addressing white supremacy. And that's the issue. And white supremacy comes back in different forms. And one thing that they like to promote is the super nigga fantasy. Now back around the turn of the 20th century, the early 1900s, they had something called the blue gum nigger disease, where the white supremacist press was putting out stories that black people had blue gums. Certain black people with blue gums were walking around and running around biting white people and giving them some kind of disease. Please look that up. Then, about a decade later, they had the cocaine-crazed Negro propaganda. This is when they were trying to get cocaine and make cocaine illegal. Because cocaine was legal. They would put cocaine in Pepsi and not Pepsi, but Coca-Cola. They would put cocaine in medicine. And they wanted to find a way to regulate it. And they had to scare people into allowing the government to pass laws. And that's another thing. A lot of times when they run with this super nigga fantasy, usually there's a law that's going to follow it. See, the white supremacists are playing chess. They like to play on racial fears, put this racial fear out there, and then pass laws after the fear is out there. And with the cocaine-crazed Negro propaganda, the press would put out all this propaganda that black people who were high on cocaine were running around with superhuman strength, and they were raping white women. Then that brings us to the next super predator, super nigger fantasy, the super rapist. And they've always had that fantasy. After slavery, that rapist fantasy popped up after Reconstruction, that black men were running around raping white women in droves. The super rapist, it just couldn't keep your dick in your pants. And we know who the real rapists were. The white supremacists were raping black women to the point where they created whole new races of people like octoroons, quadroons, mulatto. But that's never really discussed, that raping. There's slave diaries about how these white supremacists would rape women on these plantations. But black men were pinned with that super rapist label, even if it didn't make any sense. Like in Tulsa, Oklahoma, when they burned that city down, they justified burning that city down. In the black business district, they justified burning it down because they said a black dude raped a white woman in an elevator. How the hell you do that? He raped her, I guess, in 30 seconds, because he basically bumped into her, but that transferred into rape, coming down an elevator. You rape somebody on an elevator in 30 seconds. Okay. So even if it doesn't make sense, when the white supremacists get hold to it, they make it make sense. And that's what white supremacy is all about. we'll make sense out of nonsense. Why? Because we're the white supremacists and you can't do anything about it. That's what Brother Neely Fuller said. White supremacy is based on the I told you so and I say so mindset. Because the white supremacists can say anything, even if it's nonsense. But when you have the wealth, the resources, and the military muscle to back it up, what can we do? See, that's the thing we haven't figured out yet. That's the challenge of white supremacy. White supremacy is based on I told you so and I say so. I say so. That don't make sense. Rape? How do you rape somebody? We say so, but that doesn't make sense. Well, we say it makes sense. And you can't do anything about it. That's how white supremacy works. Just like with this new movie Exodus coming out. When they have all of these so-called Africans, these people who are supposed to be African, played by white actors. And people are saying to Ridley Scott, the director, and all of the people involved with the film, hey, the people didn't look like that. Yeah, they did. No, they didn't. Well, we're going to put this movie out and say they look like that, but because we say so. But if you're doing a movie about history, it kind of has to be accurate. I mean, the Egyptians didn't look like Sigourney Weaver. It's historically impossible, and for the time frame, it's just genetically impossible for them to have looked like Anglo-Europeans at that time in Africa. Yes, it is. Because we say so, and we got the money and the muscle to back up what we say. We can pay for our lies, and we got the military muscle to back our lies up. And that's how white supremacy works. So when they put out these super predator, super nigga fantasies, they have the muscle to back these lies up. So after the super rapist propaganda they had about black men in the 1970s, for those of you who are old enough to remember, excuse me, they had the PCP induced nigga craze, where the white supremacists would say, well, black people get on that PCP, they start taking those drugs, and they get superhuman strength. So you gotta beat them real hard because they won't feel it. Oh, that PCP nigga craze was heavy in the 70s and the early 80s. And then the early 80s, they transferred the PCP nigga syndrome to the crackhead. The crazy crackhead is out there preying on innocent white people to steal your money so they can get money for crack. Also in the 80s, they had the Willie Horton phenomenon. In the late 80s, they start running these campaign ads. The Republicans started running these ads talking about this dude named Willie Horton, some random black dude who went to jail, and they built this whole narrative about him getting out of jail on some kind of work release program that the other politician had endorsed. And the politician and Willie Horton, they no connection with each other, but this very loose connection with some kind of organization and some kind of policy where they would give a weekend furlough to certain prisoners. And this one guy named Willie Horton got a weekend furlough where he got out and he ended up killing some white people, killed a white couple. So they put this Willie Horton guy on these campaign ads. Do you want this guy, Willie Horton? You want another Willie Horton to come get you? So that ad was very effective because it helped get Bush in office back then, George Bush Sr. It helped him get in office by running those racist Willie Horton ads. And people have been criticizing those ads for the last 20 years, but that style of reporting is coming back. And let's go into the 90s. They still had some remnants of that whole PCP crackhead nigger predator phenomenon with Rodney King. With Rodney King, they were trying to say he was high on PCP and he didn't feel those licks that the cops were giving him. That's why they let those cops off in Los Angeles out here. Oh, he was on drugs. You know how those niggas are when they're on PCP. He was high. He didn't feel all those beatings, even though his face was swollen up to disfigurement. He could take it. Not guilty. And that's why we turned up out here. Also in the 90s, they had the super nigga fantasy with that wilding. They were talking about black folks wilding out there in New York. Black folks running around in droves, beating and raping people. So they had to double up on it. They had to double up on the lie. They were beating and raping. And those brothers, the Central Park Five, those brothers went to prison out there for a crime they didn't commit. The Central Park, was it the Central Park Five or Central Park Seven? It was one of the five or seven. But I know the brothers eventually got out of jail and the city of New York had to pay them a grip of money. See, the cost of white supremacy started going up at this point. And that's why, y'all, that wilding thing, black men going around raping people. Like I said, a lot of those stereotypes, people still hold on to them because y'all remember Mel Gibson when he went into his whole little racist rant with his ex chick. And one of the things he said, I hope you get raped by a pack of niggas. So some of these white supremacists sit back behind closed doors and just regurgitate these same old stereotypes over and over again. So now into the 2000s, there was a new variation of that super nigga fantasy. Excuse me. There's a new variation of that, the super nigga fantasy, and that was the knockout game. And y'all know I've been telling people about that knockout game and warning people about that knockout game propaganda for a minute. That knockout game propaganda where they were saying groups of black men are going around playing a game, knocking out poor, innocent, defenseless white people. And they kept reporting that. And I kept telling people, hey, this is a game they're playing. Don't fall for that. This is a setup. The white supremacists are using code words with each other. If you listen to some of my old shows, I was vehement about people not falling for that knockout game nonsense. And what the white supremacists would do, they would get some of their coons to regurgitate that knockout game nonsense. That's why, think back to some of the coons that were talking about that. This is why you don't take coons seriously. But the white supremacists were really, really going in and going on and on about the knockout game, even though people were pointing out the inconsistencies in the footage they were showing. The white supremacists would compile all of this random, unrelated footage and say that it was part of a knockout game. And a lot of people, unfortunately, will believe anything they see in the media, especially black folks. To your detriment, you will believe everything. And I was telling people then, that's a setup. They're setting things up. They're pretending to believe this nonsense. Now, some real dim-witted white supremacists out there in middle America or wherever, they might believe that because they sit up and believe everything that the top brass white supremacists tell them. And the white supremacists, they operate by putting together code words. They get on television and like Fox News and even CNN too, by the way, because CNN plays this whole liberal role. But a lot of the stuff they get into is propaganda as well. And some of these other networks too. But they get on television and they put together code words and tell each other what to say to justify white supremacy. See, the white supremacists, they get on their code at the drop of a hat. Black folks, you can't make black folks get a code of conduct at gunpoint. We can't get a code of conduct for nothing with each other. But the white supremacists, they get codes just like that. And the thing is, that knockout game, that was code. They were setting it up to let you know the next time you need justification for harming a black person, incarcerating a black person, practicing white supremacy against a black person, or killing a black person, because white supremacy is all about murder too. That's one of the ultimate parts of white supremacy, the choice to murder a black person. That's a godlike aura, and to get away with it. That's a godlike aura. It's a sick, demonic phenomenon. And also remember, just because a white supremacist is smiling in your face don't mean that he's not a white supremacist. Because see, you have white supremacists and you have white extreme supremacists, white extremists. But the thing is, that whole knockout game was a code. And that brings us to the Mike Brown situation. Think about what I'm saying. That brings us to the Mike Brown situation, because what happened with the Mike Brown and Darren Wilson situation, that was the knockout game propaganda coming to fruition for the white supremacists. They set things up to justify doing their white supremacist deeds. Now look at this whole case with Darren Wilson. It took over like 100 days for them to say they're not going to even indict him. It doesn't take 100 days to decide whether you're going to indict somebody. It takes 100 days to come up with a good lie to justify why you're not going to do it. And that's exactly what they did. They took 100 days to come up with a good lie as to why they were not going to indict Darren Wilson and let him get away scot-free for committing murder. And they timed this thing perfectly. The white supremacists, they sit back and work behind the scenes, man. We out here playing, and them white supremacists are sitting back working behind the scenes. They timed it. They waited until it got cold, because they study black folks. They know that in warmer climates, that's when we turn up, especially like back in the 60s. We talked about that in Hidden Colors 3. They waited till it got colder, and they waited Thanksgiving week, because most people would be off work and most of the white children would be out of school and they can get it in. That would minimize any damages to the dominant society. And also, when the schools and the jobs are closed down, they have better access to the freeways to bring in the National Guard, to bring in those tanks and to bring in all the equipment they needed to shut that area down. So they planned this thing militarily to a T. And then they gave the announcement at night when everybody was at, all the businesses were closed, everybody was home, the schools were closed. They gave the announcement in the middle of the night. It was colder, but people still turned up out there. People didn't give a damn about the National Guard and the police presence. They still turned up out there. And I'm not going to go too deep into the ins and outs, but I just do want to point out a few things, but I don't want to go too deep on it, because again, it's like a broken record, because the common denominator here is white supremacy. So I can go into the details all day, but I just want black people to not fall for the okie doke when you go to work the next day or tomorrow or next week, and the white supremacist is all in your face trying to con you and bait you into a bullshit conversation and try to change your mind. Talking about why are these people out there burning up their own stuff and all that old, that's deflective. That's a deflective white supremacy style conversation. Because when you look at the whole case, the prosecutor and the prosecutor out there in Ferguson, this guy, he already has ties to a website that people are saying collected money for Darren Wilson. So this dude wasn't trying to prosecute Darren Wilson. It was very obvious. And even other white people are saying this, because this is very interesting. Not only is the international community speaking out against this, you have a lot of other white people in the legal field. And also white protesters, too. A lot of white people are protesting all around the country and all around the world. But even white legal analysts are saying, hey, come on. This is a travesty of law. I know, look, if you're going to practice white supremacy, don't do it that sloppy and blatant. You're making all of us look bad. Because even some white supremacists, they want you to not be so sloppy with the way you practice white supremacy. This was sloppy and blatant. It was like blatant white supremacy. It's like Jim Crow, nasty Klan white supremacy, the way they played this out. This is why the international community is looking at the U.S. like, y'all look real janky right now. we look crazy here at the white supremacists, not us, because African melanoid people, we're looking like world heroes right now. The world is on our side. Please understand that. The world is on our side. The international community, they're looking and rooting for us. Please understand that. I'm going to Amsterdam next week and doing a lecture that was sold out already. And they have to open up another venue for me to do my another lecture the next day, because people want to know the truth from us. That's why we got to be international with this, family. But I digress. And what I want to say about the prosecution, again, this guy went out of his way to discredit all the witnesses. If you saw the press conference, everything the witnesses were saying, all the black people, he discredited them. But he didn't discredit nothing Darren Wilson said. Darren Wilson's testimony was some bullshit. I mean, I'm going to read some of the transcripts here, family. I mean, nothing Darren Wilson said was discredited. He didn't cross-examine him or nothing. So this lets you know this dude was on Darren Wilson's side. They didn't want to prosecute this dude. This was white supremacy in place. The stuff Darren Wilson was saying, it goes back to that super nigger fantasy. That Darren Wilson testimony goes back to the super nigger fantasy. First, this is one thing, and I'm not going to read too much. I'm going to try to read as much as I can, but not too much. One thing Darren Wilson said, and one thing the testimony said, it contradicts itself so many times, it's ridiculous. That's why it's embarrassing to a lot of other white people. The contradictions, it looks like some shit from the 1920s when they would lynch black folks and just put together some bullshit excuse as to why they lynched them. Now, this is the narrative. The story goes like this. At about 12 noon, August 9th, Wilson hears on the radio there's a theft in progress at the Ferguson Market. The suspect is a black male in a black shirt. Let's stop. Do y'all remember when this whole case popped off? All the cops were saying Darren Wilson didn't know about the robbery at the store, the so-called robbery. And also they were saying that the store didn't say it was a robbery too. They were saying that this wasn't a robbery, but now it is a robbery based on that tape they kept circulating around of Mike getting physical with the guy in the store. So now they say it is a robbery. And now they're saying that Darren Wilson got a call about a robbery and a suspect. All right. That's the first line here. Now, let me read on. It says, moments later, Wilson sees two black men walking down the yellow stripe in the center of the street. He pulls over and says, hey guys, why don't you walk on the sidewalk? They refuse. Let me stop right there. Now, that just contradicted the first goddamn sentence. First of all, they said he heard there was a suspect. Darren Wilson sees the suspects, and instead of saying, hey, you're a suspect, let me get some information, it was just a robbery, you're a suspect. Nope. Hey, get off the street, walk on the sidewalk. So that just contradicts the first thing. And this is what they want us to believe. And they are trying to understand why the white supremacists has caused that city to burn up. The city is burning up because of the white supremacists. And let me read more of the testimony here. So Darren Wilson says, hey, get on the sidewalk. One of the guys say, we almost at our destination. And then Wilson tries again. But what's wrong with the sidewalk? Now, let me stop there again. Now, the guy, one of Mike Brown's friends said, hey, man, the cop didn't say that. He was real aggressive when he stepped to us. He wasn't like, hey, could you get on the sidewalk? He was like, get on the sidewalk. He was very aggressive. And that makes sense. I don't see an officer rolling up on somebody with this whole meek, humble narrative. I just don't see that. Now, let me read on. Now, Darren Wilson said that Mike Brown told him, fuck what you have to say. Okay. That goes into that whole stereotypical huggy bear shit that white supremacists always project on the black people. Because that don't sound like something that somebody would say to a police officer. Somebody says, hey, get on the corner, get out the street. Oh, fuck what you have to say. That just doesn't sound like anybody would say, fuck what you have to say. So it says Wilson backed up his car and begins to open the door. Hey, come here, he says to the kid, and the kid just cursed at him. He said, Mike Brown replied, what the fuck are you gonna do? Then Brown slams the car door shut. Wilson tries to open the door again, and then Mike Brown leans into the vehicle and begins punching him. Okay. Now, does that sound like something that anybody in their right mind would do? You'd run up on a cop, fuck what you got to say. Say some old 1970 blaxploitation bullshit that don't even sound like an 18-year-old would say. Fuck what you got to say. It's always some coon crazy talk they got us saying if you let them tell it. Somebody called my show the other night. I was doing my live Ustream show. Some dude called up trying to sound black, and he had that jive ass sound in his voice. I can't find the clip. I was trying to go through my old Ustream show that I did Monday, and I had a couple of white supremacists call up talking about nigga this and nigga that, and one dude tried to sound black, like, hey, I'm from Chicago, I'm trying to see what's going on in Ferguson. And I'm like, white boy, get your little white supremacist ass off my phone. You ain't fooling nobody. But let me read some of the transcripts here. Darren Wilson said, I felt another one of those punches in my face could knock me out or worse. I meant he was bigger than I was and stronger. And I already had taken two to the face, and I didn't think I could take a third one. The third one could be fatal if he hit me right. So they deliberately put that in there like he was about to get knocked out. That's that whole knockout game. Because when you're talking and reading this narrative to 9 potential suspect white supremacist jurors, and they've been sitting up watching Fox News every single day, and trust and believe, what they do with these cases, they do jury nullification. They will find certain districts in the city or the town and find certain people who are more conservative. They look for that Fox News type of viewer. And if you want to get some white supremacists on your jury, that's really all you have to do. You just got to find out who watch shows like Fox News and who's the conservatives, because they will believe any single solitary thing negative about a black person. Some so-called liberals too, and I don't get too much into that partisan, bipartisan bullshit. I don't get into that political party stuff, but these are people you know will not be liberal in their thinking. They have a certain set view about black folks. And these are the people they want on those juries when it's a case in favor of a white person against a black person. So that's the kind of way they get down behind the scenes. But a jury of people who've been watching Fox News, and Fox News put these code words out there, and other conservative Rush Limbaugh, and I'm not just trying to make Fox News some type of god of white supremacy, because that's a leg of white supremacy. Because see, we get these little symbols of white supremacy and then focus on these symbols and not understand that it's a whole system. But they sit up and hear the word knockout game, black people playing a knockout game, knockout game, knockout game. And then they read this testimony where he's being, Darren Wilson is being knocked out, or he's trying to get knocked out by this big black guy who's bigger than him. He's almost knocking me out. He's hurting me. He's about to knock me out. I feel like a 5-year-old, and he's Hulk Hogan about to knock me out. So they use these white supremacist code words. And then when you look at Darren Wilson's picture, his ass don't have a damn scratch on him. He doesn't have any obvious signs. The little mark he had on his cheek looked like a razor scar, some shit. He put some aftershave and he got a little skin sensitivity rash or something like that. But when you look at the picture and see that Darren Wilson doesn't have any obvious scars or any kind of bruises, that's systematic white supremacy in place. Because remember, the police were putting out stories about Darren Wilson has a broken eye socket, his face is disfigured, he was beaten up badly, he has two black eyes. They were saying all types of stuff. They were planning all that stuff out there. And after the trial, they put the picture out and you see the dude don't have a scratch on him. And they waited to after the trial to put that picture out. Why do you think they waited to after the trial? Well, not the trial, but the verdict of the indictment. I keep saying trial, but it wasn't really a trial. They waited to after to put it out. Like, hey, all right, we got what we wanted. Now you can see what he really looked like. Nah, 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 nah. That's basically what it is. But let me read a little bit more the narrative of what happened with Darren Wilson and Mike Brown. So they say they're fighting. He's getting swung on in the car. Wilson shoots him. And then Mike Brown gets this angry, demonic look on his face. So now he's not a human no more. He's a demon. The blue gum nigga disease. It goes back to that whole super nigga predator. So now Mike Brown is mad. And Mike Brown yells, "You're too much of a fucking pussy to shoot me." Do anybody out there in the universe, if you're a white supremacist, Do you really believe this dude, this 18-year-old kid, got shot or got shot at and said, "You're too much of a fucking pussy to shoot me"? And then he said he shot Mike Brown. And I'm kind of skipping over some stuff not to drag it on, but he shot Mike Brown one time. Mike charged him and ran towards him like he was going to hurt him. So he shot him a few more times. So again, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse here. The problem is this. This is so far-fetched. It's so, you got to suspend all types of disbelief to even entertain this nonsense. And the fact that he has Mike Brown making all of these Huggy Bear, Superfly, Shaft, "You pussy ass honky, jive turkey, yous ain't gonna shoot me, cracker." All that old bullshit they've been sitting up watching old 70s movies. Because the white supremacists, they're late with their stereotypes. They never know how to stereotype us correctly. All the stereotypes are old. And they use a lot of the old slang and old narratives. Shit that young folks don't even say. "You too much of a pussy to shoot me." Young black folks don't talk like that. "Fuck what you have to say." Young black people don't talk like that. But I digress here, ladies and gentlemen. But again, like I say, when you tell us a person has been beaten and you don't indict them, and then we see pictures that's not consistent with the way they describe themselves, and you're telling us that we're supposed to accept that as justice, that's why those white businesses out there are burning up. And that's another thing with the white supremacists too. They like to pretend that whenever they give some type of verdict against us in a negative way and there's an uprising, because the brothers and sisters out there in Ferguson, those are freedom fighters. Those are black American patriots fighting for freedom, fighting for justice. They like to pretend, the white supremacists, they love to say, "Well, look at those people tearing up their own communities." Y'all hear that a lot from the white supremacists. When the white supremacists regurgitate the same thing over and over, they're trying to convince themselves of something. And the reason why they keep saying they're tearing up their own community, because the white supremacists, they want to feel supreme and untouchable. They want to feel like they have some kind of victory over black folks, and they do to a certain degree, but the cost of that victory is high. So is it really a victory? Because they're not destroying their own communities, because they don't own none of the things in those communities. That's why the white supremacists can come in there and regulate and kill random black people, because they don't own the things and control the things in those communities. So the things that are destroyed are usually owned by the white supremacists. Now, you can pretend that it isn't, but it is. And what CNN and all these people do to still try to trick you, and I noticed they did this all this week, they would go get a couple of people who are black, who own businesses, whose businesses were damaged a little bit, and emphasize them. They don't want to let people know that all those businesses out there are white owned and they're getting destroyed. Because that's going to start making the white supremacists think like, damn, you know, this shit kind of backfired a little bit. Okay, look, you got to kill a black kid, but look at all the multi-million dollars worth of damage that's being done, and you got to fit the bill. White supremacists, you got to fit the bill. You got to foot the bill to all that stuff. A couple of mom and pop stores out there got their windows broken. It was one lady they kept talking about. She had like a cupcake business, but she got it back together. I think she had a business or a booth at a swap meet or something. I'm not sure, at a little flea market. And they were parading her around saying, oh, look, the black people are destroying other black people's businesses. And there was I saw Don Lemon interview this black couple. They had a restaurant out there. And I think some of the windows got broken, because you got a lot of people from outside who are not familiar with the black owned businesses or whatever. So there's a lot of outside agitators getting into the mix. And I saw Don Lemon was trying to get this couple to talk badly about the protesters. Don Lemon was like, well, how do you feel about these people coming in here vandalizing your stuff? And the guy was like, you know, I'm sad, you know. I'm sad, you know, this whole situation is unfortunate. And the brother did good. The brother didn't use that as an opportunity to shit on the young people out there in the streets, which is what Don Lemonade, that's what he's doing on CNN. But I digress. I'm not going to get in on Don Lemonade. But I'm glad the brother who owned that business, he didn't use that as an opportunity to try to reprimand the young people in the streets, because he understood the situation. And again, there are only a handful of black businesses. When I mean handful, I mean about three or four. It's not that many black businesses out there in the Ferguson area. Most of those businesses and buildings and stores are white owned or non-black owned. And the store owners out there, they have the white supremacists to thank for all of that. The white supremacists have the white supremacists to thank for all of that, because the white supremacists orchestrated this whole thing. They put up a system of injustice. You cannot have a system of injustice and think that everything is going to go smooth, especially when we elect you to office to uphold the law. If we elect you to office to uphold the law and you commit injustice, and this whole case was gross injustice based on race, everything goes down and it's your fault, white supremacists. It's not those kids in the street with melanin. The white supremacists orchestrated all of it. That's why those buildings are burning, and that's why you got to foot that multi-million dollar bill. You got to foot the bill for all those police resources. You got to foot the bill for the taxes for the National Guard and all that. That costs money. That's taxpayers' money. And good, honest, decent working white people, they got to pay that. Got to take it out of their money. Is it really worth it? And the international embarrassment. Is it really worth it? The political allies that are potentially damaged worldwide. Is it really worth it? I mean, people are looking at us like real janky right now. So again, that whole super nigga narrative, they use that narrative to justify harming us. And it doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter how young you are. It was the super nigga thing with Trayvon Martin. Y'all remember when Zimmerman encountered Trayvon Martin? It was that same huggy bear shit. Zimmerman was talking about, well, Trayvon Martin came up to me and said, he jumped out of the bushes and said, hey, yo, you got a problem? I said no, and then Trayvon said, well, you do now, and then he knocked me out and beat me. You see that? That nonsensical, don't make sense, super nigga, superhuman strength, this 17-year-old kid. He's a bony 17-year-old kid, but he's beating the brakes off of a grown man to the point of death. And we're supposed to believe this stuff. And there's a new case over in Cleveland right now. There was a boy named Tamir Rice. Now, Tamir Rice was a seventh grader. And he's a 12-year-old boy. 12-year-old boy in the seventh grade. Seventh grade. And Tamir Rice was at a park. A little bit after dark, he was at a park. And he got a BB gun from one of his friends. He traded a BB gun with one of his friends. And he's out there playing with a BB gun. And somebody called the police. They saw him with this BB gun. And that's another thing I tell you, these little suspected white supremacists, especially out there in Chicago, in Cleveland, they sit up and they call the police on us at every single moment they can. Any chance they get, they find reasons to call the police on us. And then we end up getting shot, killed, hurt, maimed, or whatever. That happened earlier in Cleveland, where this man was in, I think, Walmart. He had a BB gun. Somebody called up and said he's pointing the gun at people. The cops came in and blasted him. This grown man they did this to. They did the same thing with this kid. This person called the police. And the person said on the phone, the guy looks like he has a toy gun. There's a person out here with a toy gun. He's pointing it at people. There's a person who has a gun. It might be fake. The person who reported it kept saying that it might be fake. So when the police came, and the video has been released of this because the white supremacists tried to paint it one way, but the video came out and we saw exactly what happened. They didn't give this little boy a chance to do anything. The police rolled up and jumped out the car blasting. They didn't give this little boy 1 second to do anything. They jumped out of the car blasting. And I think the chief of police out there, he gave a press conference the other day. And I want y'all to listen to a little clip of it. I want y'all to listen. They kept referring to Tamir Rice, who's 12 years old, as a young man. And they've been running the clips of the police chief out there in Cleveland, keep referring to Tamir Rice, a seventh grader. They're referring to him as a young man. And Tamir Rice is 12 years old. Now, in this press conference, somebody actually corrected the chief of police or this police officer. Now, I'm not sure if he's a chief of police or not, but he's a head officer. They corrected him. And I want y'all to listen to this.
Center this afternoon on a call of a man on the premises with a gun.
In the park behind us here.
Police say they told the boy to show his hands, but instead he lifted up his shirt and police say displayed this, a BB gun that looks just like a real gun.
The young man had a weapon in his waistband. He pulled the weapon out. One of our officers fired two shots, striking the young man.
The 12-year-old boy?
Yes.
Apparently the boy did not point the gun at officers.
Now, you notice that he kept referring to him as a young man. And one of the reporters said, you mean the 12-year-old boy? Yeah. Now, all these major news outlets, the international news outlets, I mean, the national news outlets, they cut that part off where he was corrected. Because I was looking at the national news earlier and they keep letting the guy, they keep playing the part where the guy says the young man, but they cut the part off where he was corrected by the other reporter. So this is how slick these white supremacists are. They're sending out code words. That's another code word, family. That's that super nigga code word. He looked like a boy. He might have been 12. He might have been in the seventh grade, but he's a young man. So the shots weren't that bad to that young man. And let me tell you else, what else they're doing now. And let me say this. I've talked to the family of Tamir Rice. And I've talked to his mother. I had a very long conversation with his mother the other day. Cool sister. And going through it. And my heart goes out to her. And I'm not going to talk about too much of what we said because it was a private conversation. And again, us at the Melanoid Nation, we sent money out there to help out with the funeral arrangements that they're having this weekend. And I'd like to thank all my brothers and sisters who are part of the melanoidnation.org website, by the way. But I was having a conversation with the mom, and she was just telling me so much about that young man, and she was letting me know that that BB gun, it was from a friend. He traded the gun with a friend, and again, he was out there playing with it like a toy, because it's a toy. He was out there, he was at a park playing. That's what you do at a park. He was at a park playing. And what they're going to do, see, the white supremacists, they got to come up with a way, when it's a black person, to turn him into the super nigga. They have to create that super nigga fantasy in order to criminalize him, to justify the white cop hurting him, and to justify the white supremacist people in the justice system not giving him justice. So they got to come up with ways. And the white supremacists are like chess players. See, we think like checkers and they think like chess players. So they can't demonize him for having the toy gun. Because some white supremacists online, like a few internet trolls, they'll say stuff like, why he have a gun? He shouldn't have had a gun in the first place. But the thing is, they're not going to run with that narrative too much. Why? Because Ohio is an open carry state. Ohio is an open carry state. So white people walk around Ohio with guns out in the open all the time. They do open carry demonstrations and walks where they put their guns on their hips and walk around the streets of Ohio all over the place. Open carry with their guns. They don't get shot. Nothing happens to them. Ohio is an open state, open carry state. But this little kid has a toy gun. They jump out of a car and blast him. They don't say, hey, where's your ID? Or do you have an ID for that gun? Are you licensed to have that gun? Nothing. Blackface. Somebody said they had a gun. Let's get the shooting. So let's stop this whole narrative that is not about race. And black people, stop letting the white supremacists con you into believing it's not about race. It's all about race. And the thing is, the white supremacists, they got to think of how they're going to do this narrative. Now, he's 12 years old. He's in the seventh grade, so they can't do him like they did Mike Brown. They can't do him like they did Trayvon. They can't find little pictures on his Facebook page of him throwing up gang signs. Trust me, they've looked. He's a kid. There's pictures on his Facebook page, and one of the family members sent me a picture earlier, too. And you know, he's a kid sitting up. He's hugging his sisters. He's hugging his family. He's doing kid shit. So you can't demonize him. You can't be that low of a douche to demonize this kid. There are no pictures to use against him. He's a fucking baby. They got pictures of him with toys and stuff. So you can't find a Facebook picture of him holding his hand a certain way and saying, oh, look, he's a gang member. You can't do that. So what they're going to do? They're starting to demonize and drag his parents through the mud now. The press and the media out there in Chicago, they're running stories talking about Tamir Rice. His dad has domestic violence charges. Tamir Rice's dad has several domestic violence charges, and they're trying to drag his mother, because his mother, she's been through some things too. And she's been in trouble with the law back in the day. None of that has anything to do with why that little boy was shot. And she's a good sister, by the way. Good sister, but she's been through things. Still has nothing to do with why that boy was shot. But the reason why they're going to drag the parents, and they're getting into the parents' background, and they're starting to throw mud on the parents, is because they're building a narrative for the white supremacists in the potential grand jury or any other jury. They're building a narrative. And the narrative they're building is like, we know he's a kid who got shot. We know he's a baby. We know he's 12 years old. But look at his parents. Look at his mom. Look at his dad. That's what he was going to grow up to be. So, officer, did you really do anything wrong? He was just going to grow up to be a thug anyway. So, did you do anything wrong? That's the narrative that they're trying to plant in the minds of potential white supremacist jurors. That's the only reason they would create a narrative about that little boy's mom and dad. That didn't have nothing to do with what happened with him out there in the streets and the cops rolling up on him and shooting him. But they're trying to use this narrative. Look at what he came from. They were breeding him to be a thug. Look at what they were. Look at how his parents are. Look at their bad parenting. It ain't white supremacy. It's bad parenting. Bad parenting is going to be on trial. White supremacy is never on trial. But it's bad parenting. It's Trayvon Martin and his hoodie. Y'all black folks shouldn't wear those hoodies. Mike Brown shouldn't have stole those cigarillos. That's why he got killed. Eric Garner shouldn't have had those stolen cigarettes that nobody ever found. Jordan Davis shouldn't have had that loud music up. It's always the loud music trial. It's never the white supremacy trial. It's all this other bullshit that's deflective that they put on us. And we got to stop going for the bullshit, family. We got to stop going for the white supremacist narrative. So, and again, I'm not going to just drag on and on about it. But again, we got to understand systematic white supremacy is here. We're going to have to start getting our economic game up, family. What we're going to have to start doing is learning how to get a code of conduct and disciplining ourselves with our money. We were talking about on Twitter how important it is for black people to boycott this Black Friday. Black Friday, nobody should spend nothing. Now, shout out to other celebrities out there. Tyrese, he was talking about it. He was down with that. Talib Kweli, brothers like that. And there's some brothers out there in the entertainment business who are down. And there are a lot of brothers and sisters who are on board. Now, there's some coons out there, too. But we're just going to have to let the coons go. But no black person should spend a dime on Black Friday. That's going to send a message, and that's going to be a stepping stone, because we have to take some type of first step to say, hey, look, we're going to learn how to consolidate our money and our power to protect ourselves from white supremacy. Black Friday is the first step. We got to take a first step, because the coons wanted to argue with me on Twitter about, well, what good is boycotting Black Friday going to do? That's not going to hurt nothing. It will hurt something, because if you got black people out here not throwing their money away to these white supremacist corporations who support these Darren Wilsons, because corporations and people were sending Darren Wilson money. Y'all know Darren Wilson is a damn millionaire. Darren Wilson has made over $1 million in donations. It was over $500,000 like the first month. I probably estimate that dude probably has a couple of $1 million in donations. That's why he's quitting the force. They were like, oh, Darren Wilson is going to resign. He's going to resign. He's balling. They're rewarding these white supremacists for killing you. These networks that's putting white supremacists like Rudy Giuliani on there to talk crazy about black folks and Ted Nugent to talk crazy about black people. You need to look at these shows and see who the sponsors are and never go to their asses again. But we play this little plantation game where we get beat up and we keep giving our money to the people who are beating us up. That's called being a hoe. That's what hoes do when they get pimped. You get pimped, get your ass whooped, you go out there, turn the trick, and give your money back to the motherfucker who's whooping your ass. But the thing is, if you can't discipline yourself enough to just stop spending your money with corporations for one day, and when I say spend money with corporations, it's cool to spend with a black store, a black organization, spend your money with somebody black, but we're going to have to start getting into the habit, and not just the habit, the necessity of spending our money with black businesses. On the melanoidnation.org website, we're going to put together a black business directory, a melanoid business directory for businesses all around the country that people can go to. So I want people to start emailing us, melanoidnation@gmail.com. Email me information about your business. Follow me on Twitter @Tariq Nasheed and email me or tweet me the name of your business. And I mean a business that's a tangible business that people can go into and get products and goods and services. Don't tell me you got like Hot Nigga Productions and some shit like that. No, a tangible business that people can go into and purchase something or receive some type of service from you. You understand? Something like that. So we can let people know, especially a food place. If you got like a food place, that's great. We got to start getting more grocery stores, food places. That's a necessity. And again, with the Melanoid Nation website, the melanoidnation.org organization, we're going to start helping startup businesses out with little micro loans that we're licensed to give. So we're going to talk about that pretty soon. But with Black Friday, stop making excuses to go out there to spend your money. If you're standing in line getting them new Jordans with all this shit going on, it's almost like you deserve to be disenfranchised. Because if you're not going to do anything about it, why should anybody else? The world is looking at us right now like, hey, Black folks, we're on your side. We're rocking with you. So Black men, and I talk about Black men in particular, we got to be on that leadership role. We got to step up and be leaders because the women will fall in place. I see a lot of Black men sitting around here making excuses, jiving and waiting on the next person to do it. Again, dudes, I've been arguing with dudes on Twitter all day about the importance of not spending your money on Black Friday. Well, niggas are like, well, what about we if we're gonna not do it, we need to not do it on Christmas, we need to not do it ever. Okay, let's start one day. Because the problem is, dudes get into these whole long drawn out debates, and y'all want to debate about when to do it and when not to do it, and how y'all want to sit up and debate, and you do that to deflect because you don't want to do shit, to be honest. So niggas spend time debating, and by the time you get through debating, nobody's done nothing and you're back at square one. So step one, boycott Black Friday. After that, we'll figure out when we need to boycott again. But don't just come up with excuses because you want to sit your dumb ass in line and get some nigga trinkets. And that's all it is at this point. Sitting up, letting shit happen to us without doing anything and without making some kind of stand just to get nigga trinkets, that's coon slave behavior. That is what it is. That's coon Bama slave behavior. And it's corny at this point. And we can't be looking this week. You can't discipline yourself for one day. How are we going to build something? You can't even stop giving the dominant society your paper for one damn day. So we can't be on that ignorant nonsense. You got to step up, brothers. I'm talking to brothers. Because this is like a football game, man. We need brothers out. The white supremacists are running all up and down the field. I'm trying to get some brothers up here to run some defense at least. You niggas don't even want to run defense. Niggas want to stand on the sideline with some footies and a skirt and some pom-poms and just be cheerleaders. I don't need no cheerleaders. Get out here on the field and let's run some plays. Niggas want to sit up there with a halter top on and a little weave. Talking about, give me an M. Give me an O. No, motherfucker. Get out here and play with the big dogs. You want to be out there in your little nice, cute outfit cheering. Sometimes you got to discipline yourself. Sometimes you got to sacrifice. And that's what niggas sound. Niggas sound like cheerleaders. I'm down, but I'm down for the cause, Sharik. But those new J's look hot. You want to sit on the sidelines with cute outfits like a damn cheerleader. Now, if you're going to be some moist bitch ass nigga who ain't going to be down for the cause and you letting white supremacy whoop your ass, well, go ahead, dude. Go up there with Don Lemon and all those dudes and just crack your butt cheeks open and let white supremacy run up in you. But we need warriors out here in the game who's going to make a move, take a stand, and then the women are going to fall in place. They're looking at you, ready for you to get down. But understand this, man. Darren Wilson ultimately killed Mike Brown for one reason. He killed Mike Brown because he knew Darren Wilson knew the white people in that community and the white supremacists in that community, and he knew that the white supremacists and the white supremacists in that community would allow him to get away with it. That's the one and only reason why he killed Mike Brown. He knew the white supremacist in that community would let him get away with it. Let me tell you something. White dudes, you can go on YouTube, white dudes mouth off at the cops all the time. White dudes talk shit to the cops all the time. Fuck you, dude. Fuck you, man. You fucking elitist, dude. You know, white dudes talk all types of shit to the cops. Fuck your badge, man. You work for me. I'm a taxpayer, bro. They talk shit to the cops. White dudes be pointing guns at the cops. There's several videos of white dudes fighting cops. For real fighting. Pointing guns. You got white dudes out here shooting up schools, shooting up movie theaters. They don't get shot by the cops. They get pepper sprayed, handcuffed, come out alive. You got white dudes who shoot up daycare centers and come out in cuffs. We jaywalk and get our brains blown out, and we're told that we done beat somebody up and all types of bullshit. We got 12-year-old kids that's getting blasted. We live in a system of white supremacy, and these people do that because they know the other white supremacists will support them. Not only support them, they will reward them. These white supremacists are being rewarded for killing black folks. President Obama has to do something about it, and we need to make him say something about it. We are not going to let President Obama leave office not saying anything about systematic white supremacy affecting black people all around this country like it is. And we got to go international, family. Anyway, y'all, that's been today's episode of the Tariqa Lee Radio Show. I'm out of here. I want y'all to have a great Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving. Don't spend your money on Black Friday. I'm going to holler at you on Sunday. Peace.